accession number 18802, Reel 60.
Brigadier Cowan, Reel 16. What sort of qualities were you looking for in your special recruiters, the sergeants who were sent out to the recruiting offices?
Well, first of all, I was in the hands of battalions as to the selection. I mean, they knew the importance of the job, the battalions did. And one had to rely on them to produce good NCOs. If not their best NCOs. Now, there were so many other calls on battalions for jobs, extra-regimental jobs, quite apart from internal jobs, all people screeching for the best NCOs you've got. And so there's a balance to be struck. If I can think of one gentleman who shall remain nameless, who was one of our London recruiters. Now, I had last known him as an MT sergeant in a company in 1RB in the 1950s. And he was a very fly gentleman. He'd had a fairly checkered career. And I think to say fly is almost being charitable, because he was sharp as they come. Now, he actually fitted very well into that London bit, because he was in the East End of London. And they're all like that, or many of them are like that. And so he was, although, if you looked at his record, he was not perhaps an ideal recruiter. In terms of where he was going to do it, he actually fitted very well. But because we knew who he was, one obviously laid off a little bit for some of the things he was talking about.
You needed a wide boy.
Yes, a wide boy is exactly the right description.
Did he do well for you?
Well, all our special recruiters produced people. Some of them were successful, some of them were not. Mm. And if you were to ask me to recollect how many we looked at during that year, 1961, how many passed and how many didn't pass, I'm afraid I haven't the faintest idea. Because the whole thing was recorded in an office, which I set up. I mean, there was nothing when I arrived. You know, they just said, well, you know, you'll be part of brigade headquarters, and please carry on. And I said, well, I need a senior chap to come and be, let's call it a chief clerk, or my assistant, or whatever. And I need a display man, and I need a driver, and I need a couple of other people. And eventually they said, oh, yes, sir, of course you must have those things. And so they were produced, and I had an elderly sergeant major who sadly is dead now, who I'd known very well indeed. Again, he was not the most articulate of men, and he was certainly not the most intelligent of men, but he made the grade to a company sergeant major, and he was capable of running a simple office, which is what he was required to do. And of course, regimentally, he was well known. And he was an ideal customer for me to have as my backup. I had a young man who was quite good at sort of designing things. And he produced, we had a display wagon that we carted round with us. And whenever we wanted things like anti-tank guns, we borrowed them from the demonstration battalion in Warminster. And so I had a very small team. I think we were four altogether. But between us, we were able to make the office work, keep proper records, and make absolutely sure that everybody who applied in writing to us got an answer from me. And that happened without a shadow of doubt. And we produced a regimental booklet, you know, why to be a rifleman or whatever. And there was a tear-off thing at the back saying, send this in if you're interested. A lot of people did send it in. I'm sure some aged six or seven, not being remotely interested. But they'd seen it, and they said it would be...
That's very long-term recruiting, isn't it?
Very long-term recruiting. I mean, some of them were obviously miles underage. But whoever they were, they all got an answer and got invited to a thing at Winchester.
Your office is at Winchester, then?
Yes. first time actually I'd ever served in the regimental headquarter buildings.
You were saying you had a good man, the former MT sergeant, in the East End of London, and that you had some six other special recruiters. Where were they sent to? Where were your key areas for this sort of pressure?
Well, we had one in Liverpool, one in Birmingham, one in Sunderland, one in Slough. Those were the main places, I think, from memory. And then we had about four, if not five, in London, in various places.
Sounds like London was really seen as the main pool.
Yes, because traditionally that was where the Rifle Brigade and the 60th came from.
Did you expect that you might be able to use the Territorial Army as a way of getting men interested in signing up as regulars?
Yes. How many did? I honestly can't remember. But apart from anything else, they were contacts, local contacts.
And the presence you were mentioning earlier on.
Part of the presence. And indeed, they were all made aware of what the regular requirement was. And so their brothers, sisters, nephews and whatnot, even if they weren't in the TA, maybe were sent along to have a look at us from a regular point of view.
What terms of engagement were available at that time, and what sort of terms of engagement were you trying to promote most vigorously? Was it the three-year man or the man who had served longer?
I'm just trying to remember. You see, in the old days, it was 7 and 5, wasn't it?
Yes, it was the minimum terms.
Yes. I'm just trying to remember what the equivalent was in 61. Certainly there was a three-year man. I think it was 3, 6 and 9, if I remember. I don't think there was a 21 just in one go.
I think that's re-engagement, isn't it?
Yes.
Going up for 21 or 22 years.
I think it was 3, 6 and 9. Mm-hmm. And I suppose, I'm guessing a little bit, but I would think probably the majority of our applicants were for 3. That was acceptable. It was then up to us to retain them.
Were you concerned with retention as well as with recruitment?
No. That was for battalions. I was concerned with getting them into battalions. But you see, when you say, was I concerned with retention, in the back of my mind, of course I was. But the whole idea of regimental recruiting on the basis that we were doing it was completely new. You know, I set up the office, I set up from scratch. Now, although somebody had been recruiting, it was one of the old and bold from the retired officer lot who, you know, one of his responsibilities was recruiting. But I was the one who actually was imported as a relatively senior, because I was a brevet lieutenant colonel by then, relatively senior chap, actually to run the thing on a proper basis. And so we were so concerned with actually finding people and filling the gaps that were going to be left by the National Service people when they left at the end of 1961, because that's when the last National Service man, I can't remember if he left then or if it was the last National Service man came in then. Certainly the end of 61 registers for one of those two things, and I can't remember which it was. And so we were really wholly concerned with finding enough people to fill the battalions.
Did you manage to do it? Did you set up a viable recruiting system?
We certainly set up a viable system, but when I said just now I can't recollect what the numbers were. I mean, all this was recorded in the office at the time, and we knew we were getting a lot of people. There was never going to be enough. I mean, we needed for this exercise to go on and on.
Of course, the advantage of the three-year man is that you then build up a body of reservists, don't you?
Yes.
So that if there is serious trouble, then you've got them to draw upon to replace battle casualties.
Yes.
But presumably, you can't really expect them to grow up into good NCOs.
It's surprising how quickly young NCOs identify themselves. And I found that in Malaya in particular. I mean, some of the corporals were absolutely first class, and they were very young. Very young. And, you know, when I think back to when I joined, an older, bold lance corporals, and you stood to attention and said, yes, corporal, or no, corporal. Well, it wasn't like that at all. I mean, they were very young and very mobile and very active young NCOs. And that's rewarding.
But did you find that when you were recruiting on a regular basis, you got the same sort of range of abilities coming in?
Well, again, unless one could consult the records and look at the numbers we got and how they spread across the various ability levels, I can't answer that question. But my recollection is that we were quite pleased.
You were pleased with the overall quality of the
yes.
intake?
But then we did take a lot of trouble.
Trouble? In the sense of sorting them out?
Sorting them out on the one hand, and also taking quite a lot of care over their training on the other hand.
Did they require more intensive training than the National Servicemen had? Or was it a different type of training or a different approach to training?
I suspect probably as time went by, the various training people, the young officers and the NCOs, probably realised that they were dealing with a slightly different sort of person and that they had to adjust their systems a little bit. And certainly there were one or two people who quite certainly needed extra education, who'd slipped through the net.
They were remedial cases?
Yes.
They mentioned young officers. Obviously this effort was directed mainly at getting soldiers into the battalions. What about officer recruiting? Was that a cause of concern with the end of national service?
I had nothing to do with officer recruiting at all. That was done through the brigade colonel and his systems. By and large, we have never had an officer problem. I say ever, but that's perhaps a little bit wide. But certainly, since the time I was recruited in 1941, I suppose, I was first recruited. And, I mean, there was a team of people went round, the public schools in particular, selecting people. And I'm afraid, you know, you may say that it's antisocial, etc., etc., but that's the way we've always gone on. And I suspect it's probably the way we're still going on. But there has never been an officer problem that I'm aware of.
So that wasn't a cause for concern at all?
No. Now, whether other people thought that it was a cause for concern, I don't know. But certainly I'm not aware of it.
I think you're saying that next thing that happened was that you went off to the staff college.
Yes.
And you arrived there in the winter of 1961.
Yes, to sit in on the last term of the outgoing course.
Was this a sort of introduction to the staff college and to your work as DS?
Yes. Yeah. I think it was quite a sensible arrangement, really. But I didn't take on my own syndicate until January of the following year.
1962, that
1962,
would be.
1962, and I was there 62 and 63.
Had there been any significant changes in the staff college, in the organisation or syllabus or method of instruction, since you'd been there yourself as a student?
Method of instruction was still syndicate, which, in my humble opinion, is a very superior system indeed. And I don't have experience in other places, but I would guess it's unmatched round about the place. And as I understand it, a number of civilian staff college equivalents have taken on similar systems. As far as central teaching was concerned, well, I suppose there were just the same general level of lectures and things that had been before. topics were different. Charles Harrington was the commandant when I went there, when I went back there, and he had launched an exercise that he called Homo Sapiens, and that was a brilliant introduction, really a new subject. I suppose it had always been around, but it hadn't been identified in quite that way. And he got a very, very wide range of people to come and talk to the students as a body, or a local government man, an MP. I don't think he had a judge, but he had probation officers. I mean, right across the board of human behavior. And it was a very, very interesting exercise. But that was new. The nuclear side was new, because I don't think it ever got a mention when I was a student. Otherwise, I think it was just updated. I mean, the general tactics taught were the same, perhaps skirmishing rather than sort of deliberate attacks and that sort of thing. The organizational studies, the SD side of life, were very much the same but updated. Training, systems of training, well, again, updated, but the teaching of it very much the same.
Well, the essential principles, were
yes.
they?
Yes, yeah.
You mentioned Homo sapiens as a new topic. Were there any other new topics that you can recollect?
Other than nuclear, no. And of course, the fact that they'd all done a stint at Shrivenham.
What happened at Shrivenham?
For 3 months. On the what was it called? A General Staff short course or something like that. And just an introduction to science, physics, chemistry, electronics, and indeed I was sent there at the end of that year, end of 62, to be one of the staff college instructors at Shrivenham. One went from each division, the three of us, and I just managed to keep in front of my students by reading well into the night about what was going to happen the next day.
What were you teaching?
What was I teaching? Weapon development, weapon purchasing, that sort of thing.
This sounds more like technology than science, doesn't it? It's applied science.
Yes. I mean, the Shrivenham people, I mean, there was a man who taught mathematics,
yes.
for instance. Did two lectures. I went to both. The first one, I understood everything he was talking about till the last 45 seconds. The second one, I didn't understand a word from start to finish.
What about the students? How did they get on with
well,
the second lecture?
Well, the students who were that way inclined got on very well. The students who were like me were lost. But it was all right, because we all were in it together, and the syndicates were made up in... They were slightly bigger syndicates than in Camberley. And they made very sure that each syndicate had at least one and probably two or three people who knew about this sort of thing. You got a sapper, you got a signals man, and you got somebody who perhaps had a degree in in whatever. And in each syndicate, there were two or three people, as the poor old DS who didn't know about these things at all, who you could call on, either to answer the questions that were being asked, or to describe something, or to enlarge on something that there'd been a lecture about. And so we all actually enjoyed it very much indeed, that 3 months. And although, as I say, I'd never done science at school. I only did elementary mathematics at school. And so to that extent, I was a sheep without clothing. But I enjoyed the whole experience very much indeed, including lectures on electronics, demonstrations of electronics. You name it. I mean, I enjoyed it.
So you were picking up new things. You were getting...
I was completing my education. Well, not completing it, beginning to complete my education.
And you mentioned the nuclear as being a new topic. Was that... did that range all the way up to nuclear strategy, or was it primarily on tactical nuclear weapons and their uses?
There was a bit at Shrivenham which was on the technical side.
But on the way these weapons worked?
Yes. I mean, fission and fusion and all that. As far as the nuclear side at Camberley was concerned, it was the tactical side.
Not the grand strategy of deterrence and...
No.
You mentioned the tactics at Camberley. What sort of level of tactics was being emphasised? Was it battalion level or brigade or division or above?
Oh dear. I think probably to brigade, but division got a mention. But I would think mainly to brigade, battalion and brigade.
Do you remember what style of exercises you were using to consolidate these tactical lessons? What forms did the practical exercises take?
Well, a number of toots, which I suppose is the initial side, and then each term there was a telephone battle, which lasted 2 or 3 days.
Would that be at the end of the
term? That would be at the end of the term.
So that would be a final...
Yes.
Combination.
A final sort of exercising of everything that had been done on that particular front. And there was a commander... was selected to be on the friendly forces, and a commander to be the Fantasian forces, and the DS sort of ran it between them. But they were they were good value, those telephone battles.
Where were they set? Were they set in England, or were they set in Germany, or were they set in some fantasy territory, in Fantasia land?
I think they were set in fantasy territory from memory.
How was the terrain generated? Was it?
Can't remember.
When the Fantasians were attacking, were they commanded by members of the directing staff, or were they under the command of students?
No, I think the students... No, they were under the DS. The students produced a divisional commander, a brigade, and a couple of brigade commanders, if I remember correctly, and various other sort of parts of the staff, those headquarters. No, the Fantasia lot were controlled by the DS.
So you were both umpiring it and providing enemy at the same time? Were the terms the same as the ones you'd followed when you'd been a student?
Broadly, yes, except there was a nuclear term, which of course there hadn't been before.
And that would have been the context of a major land battle with the use of tactical nuclear weapons?
Yes.
When you were at Camberley doing these telephone battles and exercises, were they, the students, taught to use the watch and ward tactics that you've been practicing when you were in 12th Brigade?
Yes.
So they hadn't yet been, they hadn't been overtaken by anything?
No. But that is partly because my predecessor in the nuclear team, there was an exercise called Black Tarquin, which was the big nuclear exercise of that term. And he had been out to C-12 Brigade, I think, when he was running the exercise. And when I took it on, I went back to 12th Brigade to sort of get updated on it all. And everybody was happy that I should go to that brigade rather than to another one. And so I can only assume that it was sort of generally accepted practice by then that that's what how the battle was going to be conducted. And so I just got myself updated and just rewrote the exercise a little bit to take account of new thoughts, and we all got on with it.
Was the nuclear side of things your personal speciality when you were...
I was part of the nuclear team, yes.
But was that permanent for your period as DS?
Yes. But, I mean, we did everything else as well. But there was a team of three or four of us, which was called the nuclear team, and we all did different things. We were responsible for different exercises and different bits of instruction on the nuclear side, but also we were responsible for doing our normal business at DS across the board.
What about written work for the students? You mentioned syndicate, presumably that's syndicate discussion.
Yes.
Of topics.
Yes.
And I'm presuming that would involve them doing some reading in advance before they came into the syndicate room. And there are the outdoor exercises, the toots, and there are the telephone battles at the end of each term, where presumably they were in their cloth model rooms.
Yes.
Yeah. How much written work did they have to do? And what form did that take?
Well, there was an exercise on letter writing. There was an exercise on minute taking. There was these being written. There was an exercise on staff duties, generally. There was a major essay on a military history subject, which was done sort of during the summer break or whenever. I remember when I was a student leaving it till the bitter end and having a terrible business to finish, but, you know, that's as may be. There were other written things, and to be honest, I don't remember what they were.
Did they have to do presentations, formal presentations on topics and subjects?
I think... I don't really remember. Most of the presentations were done by DS. I mean, you know, playlet things to put over topics and lessons and things, which, although I say it myself, were actually quite good and well done. And, of course, the Allenbrook Hall had a very sophisticated electrical setup, which, of course, was new from my time. I think we taught them about presentations, but I don't, and I imagine this sort of probably in syndicate each person had to do a little something. I don't think there was a formal exercise on presentations from memory.
Did you go on a battlefield tour?
Yes.
What did you cover on that? What was the purpose behind it and the method and the emphasis?
Well, the one I was involved in was Epsom. We did three battles and Epsom. The awful thing is I actually can't remember what the others were.
Goodwood, perhaps?
Goodwood, yes. Goodwood and Epsom, and there was one other.
Well, might have been the airborne landings on the Beauville Ridge.
Don't think so. I can't remember. But there were three. And there was a DS team for each, and I was on the Epsom team.
Do you remember where you actually went on there? The field at Epsom, where you started off.
I don't remember.
What route you followed through? And,
no, I don't remember.
Any of the features?
No, I don't remember.
Did you have the benefit of veterans?
Yes.
How did you use them?
Oh, to enthrall